The Remarkable People Podcast. Check it out. The Remarkable People Podcast. Listen, do, repeat. For life.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Remarkable People Podcast. We took a break and missed you, and we are so thankful we're back together again for another season. No, actually, we're changing things up. No more seasons. We're just going episode after episode of great content, remarkable guests, incredible stories, and content that'll help us all grow. So, before we get into this remarkable episode, what I wanted to share with you is a couple things. Instead of launching Mondays at 2 a.m. Central Standard Time, new episodes are going to drop Tuesdays at 2. So instead of Mondays at 2 a.m., episodes drop weekly at 2 a.m. on Tuesdays. The other thing is we have intern Casey helping us. This year, each episode, intern Casey is going to be behind the scenes making content for you to enjoy visually and audibly. If you want to give Casey a shout out, go to the website, davidpasqualone.com, drop Casey an email, and I'm sure it'll make his day. And we're going to show you and introduce you to Casey during the next few episodes. So we're going to be on location. As you can see, the background changed, right? This season, we're in my travel trailer. And right now we're in Molino, Florida. We might be traveling around this area. We might be going cross country. You never know who we're going to meet. So keep an eye on the background and the what's going on. And you don't know who's next. You don't know where we're going to be next. But we're thankful that each week we can be with you. We can be growing together. And we can be learning and doing. Like our slogan says, don't just listen to the show, but do what we teach you. Repeat it every day and have a great life, this life and in the next. So I'm David Pasqual with the Remarkable People Podcast. We are stoked that you're here. Enjoy this episode. Don't forget to stay around to the end where you have a special offer. And that's it. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Remarkable People Podcast. See you soon. Hey, friends. This episode you're about to listen to is a twofer. Meaning we have an episode within an episode. Not only are we going to hear the remarkable story of Ryan Waugh's passionate journey into winemaking and life and celebrating an everyday existence, but we're also going to hear the story of how as a dad or as a mom and as a parent or even just a human to another human, we can invest in others and nurture our children and get them excited about entrepreneurship. Bring a product to market, bring an idea to reality, or maybe you yourself just need this help. So Ryan Waugh is going to share with us an amazing, remarkable even episode on his life story, how Waugh Family Wines was born, and how Kritz, the new shoe that you're going to be able to wear, will be all over the country, the world, and helping others grow from the mind of an eight-year-old. So check it out. Before we move on with this remarkable episode, though, let's take a moment to thank our sponsors. Our first sponsor today is Pam Heinold. Pam Heinold in the Pensacola region is one of the top realtors. And while you don't care about where she is in the hierarchy, if you're looking to buy a home, sell your home, get investment properties, or just have a short-term vacation, Pam's who you want to talk to, so you should care. Pam will help you find the right property, whether it's for a permanent residence, a second home, a vacation rental, or whether you're looking to enjoy this remarkable community in Pensacola. She'll listen to your needs, find the right property, negotiate for you like a lion, and then help you get moved into your beautiful new home. So check out pamheinold.com. It'll be in the show notes. Click on the link, give her a call, and make sure you tell her Dave sent you. Our next sponsor is Jim Butler of Butler's Auto Recycling. Butler's is a place you can go to in Pensacola, but you don't probably live in Pensacola. You might live somewhere in the country or maybe around the world. Well, if you have a car that you're looking for parts for, if you're looking for an old restore, or if you're looking for a hard to find engine, look at Butler's. Check out the show notes for the website, the phone number, and you can probably find what you're looking for. Butler's has great rates, fantastic service. And if you mention this ad, you're going to get a free hat or t-shirt to be sporting around the car while you're fixing it, right? Car, truck, SUV, tank, Jeep, whatever it is. So check out Butler's Auto Recycling. Check out PamHowell.com. And now get your notebook ready, unless you're driving, and get ready for Mr. Ryan Waugh and learn about Waugh Family Wines and Crits. Enjoy. Hey, Ryan, how are you today, brother?
I'm doing very well, David. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, as we just introduced Ryan Waugh, he is an incredible, remarkable guy, and he's going to share his story at this time. So take your pens and paper, unless you're driving, then hold off and replay this later. And then what we're going to do is, Ryan, go through your story. Tell us from as far back as you want to go, what are the challenges and obstacles you've really had to overcome in life that you think will help the listeners and those practical steps. Then we're going to transition to where you are today and how can we help you grow and your son and the exciting project that you guys are working on together. It's so cool. So Ryan, at this time, please take over and share your story with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you everybody for listening. Like David said, my name's Ryan Waugh and I grew up in a small town in Oregon, and I got I'm 44 years old, and I got a scholarship to Santa Clara when I was a senior in high school. And so I decided to take it, moved to California, and I wanted to be a doctor. I have a biochemistry degree from Santa Clara, and my freshman year, Santa Clara, I, you know, met a bunch of friends and I met a girl, and her dad actually introduced me to wine. One day on a Saturday, he said, "Hey, do you want to open up a bottle of wine from the year you were born?" And I was like, sure. It was right before my 18th birthday. And so we opened up a bottle of wine, and we, it changed the course of my life. David,
that's one heck of a bottle of wine.
Yeah, it is one heck of a bottle of wine. And I still have that bottle. And it hangs in our dining room in a shadow box. I kept it all these years, and my amazing wife put it in a shadow box, and it hangs in our dining room. It's packed up now because we're in the middle of a move. But I did bring something to show you. So I took another. He let me take a few bottles that were full from the cases that he had, and I still have one. So this is it. It's a 1976 Stag's Leap Wine Cellars Cabernet Sauvignon Lot 2. Really, really
wow.
Stuff. Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah, I've got another story that will blow your mind if the listeners don't know anything about Stag's Leap and the founder and all that stuff. I've got a great story to share. But I had this one bottle, and it changed the course of my life. And it was, I kind of, you know, you're young and you don't really fully understand the world, and you're just exploring and trying to figure it out. And the sort of looking through the prism of wine really helped me find how I wanted to live my life. And it was kind of encapsulated in this one sort of afternoon evening I had with this family, where we drank this bottle of wine, and her dad was, you know, telling me some dirty jokes, and that was super funny. And, you know, we were just two dudes drinking some wine in the afternoon, and so funny. And then we ended up having a kind of an early dinner that night. And I remember him, I grew up with two older brothers and an older sister, and it was kind of you know, things were going really fast and my parents, and, you know, so it was a lot of stews and a lot of, like, my mom's a hell of a cook, but a lot of times it was just volume and, you know, how can you get it on the table fast? And so our meals were really just about filling the belly. You know, it wasn't sitting down and, you know, talking about your day or anything like that. But this family, it was like that. And then they also had very simple meals. So they made this night that I had this bottle of wine, they made a pork tenderloin and he wrapped it in lavender and rosemary. And then he baked it for a little bit. And then he finished it on his barbecue. And then his wife made this wild rice dish. And, oh, this was hysterical. So she comes up to me and she says, "Hey, Ryan, do you like arugula?" And I remember looking at her and I'm going,
"What's arugula?"
Well, I was thinking to myself, come on, you got a scholarship to Santa Clara. Like, you're a smart guy. Like, what is arugula? And I couldn't fake it because I didn't want to, if she asks a follow-up question, you don't know. So I just told her, "I don't know what that is." And she pulls it out of the refrigerator. And I remember going, "Oh, I love salad. Like, lettuce is great." it turns out I love arugula, but it is not like regular lettuce, right? We had this meal and they would always sit down around this round table and they would have these incredible meals and they would talk about their day and what was going on in their lives. And then wine was always flowing. And it was just very, very cool. And I remember thinking to myself, that's what I want my life to be like. And if I have a family, that's what I want it to be like. So we've sort of manifested that. And that's sort of how my wife, Crystal, and I, we operate our family around the meals and the table. And that's kind of what I took away from that first experience with wine. And then operating your life. And I found that at a very young age, which is very cool. And then in terms of wine,
actually, before you go on, I got to ask the question, the meal you had at 18, was that with your wife's family or a separate girl?
Good question. Different girl.
Okay. So this really impacted you, but it wasn't like the start of your marriage either. This was a separate woman, separate experience.
Yep. Her name is Courtney. And if she's listening,
you changed my life, but I married another woman.
so they all know that, like, we're all there. And you remember what it was like to be young and you're in college. Love. No, it was, our relationship didn't end great. And that was all on me. I wasn't, I basically fell in love with wine and not her. And, you know, so I didn't handle that all that well, but, they actually live down in Monterey and she's got two kids, happily married, super awesome. And I stay in touch with her parents, and 'cause they altered the course of my life. You know, how do you thank somebody for that?
Yeah, absolutely. And if I'm hearing you correctly, it wasn't just the taste of wine or the effects of wine. It was the whole experience of wine, like the camaraderie and the openness. And it's, you know, like cigars or coffee. It's you talk and communicate and family. Is that what really drew you in?
Yeah. I mean, it was obviously when he opened that bottle and I put my nose in that glass. I mean, I remember that feeling. It makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Like I can relive that smell over and over and over again in my mind. And that's really incredible. But it's more a reflection of what wine represents, just like what you're saying. It's a very different beverage. It is a lot more similar to coffee than it is let's say beer as another alcoholic beverage. Like wine is really communal. Like it really bring people together. And we've built our brand in that same vein, in that same way. You know, we're almost 100% direct to consumer. We'll get into this, but we don't do scores. We don't do ratings. Like we've built a brand in a very untraditional manner, and very slowly, but in a super heartfelt, meaningful way where we don't feel like we're selling, let's say, just a widget or something. Like we're selling an emotion and experience and a connection that we take very seriously, and it's how we live our lives and the way we how we operate is all in that relationship.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. And we're 18 years old at the table experiencing your first wine, and we're going to get to what made you start the business and where you are today. But I have to ask, along with that first experience, like my family is Italian American. We're proud to be Americans, but the whole heritage comes from Italy. So all of our neighbors were either Italian, Portuguese, and a few Irish in our neighborhood.
And where was that?
Outside of Boston in Milford, Mass.
Cool.
And so every meal, there was a bottle of wine. It wasn't alcohol. It was just like tradition. And like everybody would just drink wine. I mean, it was just part of the culture. Nobody got drunk and blasted. They just drank wine. I mean, children, adults. So did you grow up in more of an American culture where it's like, you don't drink wine, you don't drink till you're 21. Is that why that 18 now is such a big deal to you? Something totally different?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I grew up traditional American home and values. Yeah. You don't, my parents weren't big drinkers, and they're big wine lovers now.
I wonder
but,
why.
Totally. But they were, after they got over the fact that I was not going to be a doctor, it took a handful of years to, you're going to do what?
Yeah. And the reason why I brought that up is because we have listeners from not only all over the United States, but we're in over 70 countries. So culturally, wow, people are listening like, what's the big deal? It's just wine. But in America, just so you guys understand the frame of reference, if you're listening in any other continent, in America, we're kind of grown up where wine is for adults, it's alcoholic, you don't drink till you're 21, then you drink responsibly. So that's why when Ryan is saying, hey, I had it at 18 and it changed my life, it wasn't like an everyday thing like you may experience or, you know, someone else. So that's why I just want to clarify that for the overseas listening.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Well, I mean, a very recent example, we drove up to Oregon. My parents, who are a little older, dad is 78 and retiring in January, and they're downsizing their house. So we drove up there for Thanksgiving to help out with the move and see all the cousins. Well, we're sitting at the Thanksgiving table and the boys just have wine, right? That's just it. They have a little glass and they get a, little nosh or whatever it is we're drinks. We opened up some special wines. And so at that end of the table, their cousins were like, Carter, what are you doing? Like that's wine. And he's like, well, yeah, it's just wine. And so their minds were blown. I mean, and they even know that their uncle makes wine, right? And it still is sort of not, I guess it's not traditional in America. So we're, even around here, I mean, we're right in the middle of Napa and you still don't.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I didn't want to derail, but like some people drink it all. Some people drink with every meal. Some people are alcoholics, and you need to go back to episode, different episode for the addictions, right? We'll reach out to me and I'll send you the links. But for those of you who have wine with your meal or balance, that's what we're talking about today. But let's get back to your story, Ryan. You got an awesome story, a remarkable story. keep going. So now you're at the table and you're thinking, this is amazing. And your interest grows more and more. Pick up there with the story.
Yeah. So then it was, you know, we got to go pre, and most of your listeners, depending on their age group, will remember what it was like not to have a smartphone and access to Google and, you know, in anything, or Ask Jeeves, if you remember that, pre-Google, all that stuff. We didn't have any of that. So
yeah, when you and I grew up, the first modem, you had a phone that hooked to the wall that you put on a pad and went bing, bing, bing.
The dial-up.
Like, you type less than text messages today.
Yeah. Yes. So finding out more about wine, like how am I going to do that? So I did two things initially. I drove to Barnes & Noble, right? And I went to the wine section. And in the 90s, the wine section was one tiny shelf, super small. And I got a few books and I started reading about them. And I learned that wine, you know, came from grapes that grew on vines. And like, I knew nothing, right? You don't know anything. You know, when you're young and you're drinking anything, it's not like you, unless you grew up in farming or kind of understand any of that, you're like, oh, this is just a liquid. Like, you don't really understand the logistics behind what makes these things happen. And so I ended up going into, at Santa Clara, you could go in to the residence of the priests and access all sorts of stuff. They had a really cool library and they had telephone books and all sorts of stuff. And my advisor, who is, you know, one of the most amazing humans I've ever met, Father Parnell, kind of my life ambassador, just a phenomenal dude. And so I went
like
and
a
got
mentor,
his,
like a
yes,
mentor.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Just a life mentor. We had some incredible discussions, and I know in our last conversation, I was telling you, we'll get on to him, but he was, I'll tell you this, he's one of the only evolutionary biologists, multiple PhDs, who is a Catholic priest. Like, his academic career has been around evolution, right? And the science of evolution, yet he's a Catholic priest, phenomenal human being. You should have him on. So
we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Amazing human. So I look through this, phone book and I look up all the wineries in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which aren't too far from Santa Clara. And I just start calling them. I use the phone there in the residence and I just go down the line and I was asking for a job. Like, I want a job. And they're like, well, what do you know about wineries, vineyards, whatever? I'm like, I know nothing. But, you know, I'm capable, I'm smart, I just love to throw me out in a vineyard, whatever. Like, I was willing to do anything. And it was no, 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 no. And I got to the S's. I started in the A's. I got to the S's. So that tells you how many no's I got. And Savannah Chanel, I called. And I got a brand new winemaker who just took the position, Michael McNeil, who is my wine mentor and has taught me everything I know. He's now the head winemaker at Hanzel. He's been there almost 10 years now, I think. Also an incredible human. So he said, yeah, why don't you come on up? I could use some help. I went, okay. So I drove up there and he threw me out into a vineyard. And that was 27 harvests ago. So that's wow. Kind of all I've done in my career from Santa Clara is, you know, grow grapes and make wine. And he just, you know, he was one of those people, and I don't know how you find these people. I mean, this is so random, right? I mean, I'm looking through a phone book and just making phone calls and I get a hold of him. And then we end up meeting and he sort of, I mean, absolutely changed my wine life, but he did something that he didn't have to do. He had his first child that harvest. And so he was super busy and I was working with his assistant, but right after harvest, having no, you know, I don't have any knowledge of really what just happened. And you're working so hard and things are coming at you so fast and you're just doing what you're told. And at the end of it, I was like, whoa, you know, we ended up with a few thousand barrels of wine and oh my gosh, how'd that happen? And he took a couple days of his time and he said, Ryan, I'd like to spend some time with you in the cellar. And we went barrel by barrel and smelled and tasted. And he related everything that I had worked on in the vineyard and in the winery. And he related to the action that he took in the work orders and the production of this wine. And it was just like this step-by-step in his thought process and what he was doing. And I really realized how much of an art form it was. And that just sort of, that set me free from a wine making standpoint. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, there's no limit. Like you can, this is like a blank canvas every year and you get to do whatever you want. I mean, it was really remarkable. And that's when I knew, okay, I think I've found my calling professionally. Whereas when I had that dinner and I had that first wine, that was sort of like, that's what I want my life to be like. You know what I mean? In terms of community, if I was to have kids and family and all of that. But I wasn't really thinking, oh, professionally, I'm going to go into winemaking. And I mean, it really wasn't until that moment with McNeil that I was like, well, I can do this. Like, you don't, it's not, I don't know. I just knew I could do it.
Yeah. And that's what's great. That's the first, like, I mean, first, you've had many lessons so far, but as the listener, you know, Ryan loved that moment at that dinner table with the wine and he wanted to learn more. So he took the initiative to go to the library, to look through the card catalogs, to go through Barnes and Noble, to do all the things that he needed to do to learn. So you took effort and you did. Like our slogan is listen, do, repeat for life. So if you're listening to this, and again, let's go back to a little history lesson. In America, first off, where Ryan's at, if you were like saying, well, in the average town, there's three taxi companies. Well, in New York, there's 3,000 taxi companies, right? Well, in America, the average winery, there's like, you know, maybe a couple in each region. But in California, there's hundreds. And Ryan took a phone book, which back in the old days was thick. And they were font was like size 4. And he went down A, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 3,000, no, B, C, D, all the way to S before he hooked up with Michael. So I just want you to understand that that's a big lesson. Like, you're so good at this and you're just like, hey, you're just a doer. But if you're listening, things don't just fall in your lap when you're staying still. You got to be moving. And like Michael's a perfect example. He's like, how did Michael McNeil come into my life? Well, he put in the effort and then God provided. So God gave him the vision. Ryan follows up with it. And then he provides Michael. But it took effort to get there. It wasn't just like sit down and wait for the roof to open and money falls in, right? So I just wanted to clarify that to you. That's like every day. That's just how I did it. But that led into a journey. And you didn't jump into an executive C-suite position. You started at the bottom level and worked your way up, right?
Oh, yeah. And it got worse.
Explain that. Because a lot of people, especially the generation of our children today, they're like, I want to work for a radio station. I want to be a DJ. Okay, well, you don't just get on air. You have to work through the system and make connections. And, you know, maybe one out of a million actually gets some opportunity because daddy owns a station. But for most people, you got to work yourself up through the organization and prove your worth. So talk to us about how you worked through the organization.
Yeah. So that's critical because I didn't know if, you know, I needed to finish my education, right? So, and I, they didn't have, Santa Clara didn't have a fermentation scientist, you know, degree. And, but I loved the school. And so I just stuck with my science, and I went through and got my degree. But in those 4 years, I was working at Savannah Chanel, and then McNeil, I asked him, you know, what would you recommend that I do? And I want to stay at Santa Clara, get my degree. What do you recommend? He said, well, why don't you go up to the career fair at UC Davis? I said, okay, well, that might be fun. So I went to this career fair, and I met a bunch of really cool people. And there was a winery called Chateau Potel, who was up on Mount Veeder, and they needed a part-time cellar master. So it's a 2-hour drive door to door from Santa Clara to the top of Mount Veeder to Chateau Potel. And I was like, I can do this. So I get this job. And everybody was like, how are you going to do it? I was like, so I went to Father Parnell, and I said, Father Parnell, can you help me organize my schedule so I can have Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to drive up to Napa to be the part-time cellar master at this winery? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So I had all my classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then he let me do my labs on the weekends. So you would let me in, and I'd go do my labs, but I would get up at 4 a.m, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I would drive to Napa, to Mount Veeder, and I would work all the barrels and do what I need to do for the winemaker. And then I'd drive back at night. And then I'd go to school on Tuesday. I'd wake up Wednesday and drive to Napa. And so I did that for a couple of years. And so that got me into, you know, knowing the wine community, right, a lot better. So that when I moved here after graduation, it wasn't Ryan, some brand new outsider, you know.
Yeah. And those 2 years were super easy, low key, stress free, right?
It was brutal. It was brutal, especially when you're still young and you're in college, people, like, you got to parties and whatnot, and you're still hanging out with people and trying to, I will say I probably, life is all about choices, right? And you're making choices, and typically you're sacrificing something for, you know, something else. And I probably sacrificed some relationships and some probably quality relationships in college at that time, just because I wasn't around. You know, I was out doing this stuff. But overall, I wouldn't change anything.
No, absolutely not. And I brought that up because, again, you know, you made a bunch of points, but major point number two is, like you said, life is choices. And you made sacrifices, and you worked really hard, drove thousands of miles, but you were fulfilling what you were called to do. So I just, again, I don't want people to live under this disillusion that everything is just easy, and if I just imagine it, it will happen. Because there is some truth to, you know, the law of attraction, what people call today, but there's also you reap what you sow, and we need to work hard and back it up. So it's great to hear your story and to see that dedication. And that's what we need. We need that dedication and sacrifice so you can have the life you have today. So keep going with your story.
Yeah. And then you have to do, I have lots of young people reach out to me, mainly through our wine club members and other people who are like, oh, I've got a son, a daughter, a niece, a nephew thinking about going into wine, and they'd love to chat with you. I'm like, okay. And they all ask me the same thing. What should I do? And I always tell them, you need to go work in a winery at the very bottom, work in a vineyard at the very bottom. Cause if you don't like that stuff, then you're not going to enjoy the rest of it. Just cause it's hard, this industry, and every industry is difficult. Just this one is very physical, right? Cause you're working a material to make something, and it has a shelf life too, you know, and so it's very sensitive. But you also have to,
and weather, things out of your control. I mean, you have literally, if there's a storm, a 100-year storm, that affects your livelihood. Things you can't predict or prepare for.
Oh yeah. I mean,
to a point,
Mother Nature has taught me all sorts of things. I mean, wine has taught me, patience is a big one. Tolerance, you know, how do you, perseverance. I mean, all the, you can learn all sorts of lessons, but then you also have to, you've got to go. And David, to your point, you've got to take a risk. And most people associate risk with money, but that's really not the risk you need to be taking as a young person. I mean, if you have access to capital, that's great, but the risk is more emotional, right? You need to, because people ask me, how did you start? Like, where did you start? And here's how I started. So I moved to Napa, and I was renting this little house from the 1950s. It was really bad. If my wife was here, she'd tell you it was really bad. She made me move out of there after we met. And I was like, I think I could do this. And back then, this was before 9/11, you could bond a garage in California as a winery. So I got my landlord to agree that I could bond the garage as a winery. So I applied and I got it approved, and I was like, okay. That was really inexpensive back then. And that was with the ATF, and now it's the TTB. So things are a little bit different. And then I knew I loved Sauvignon Blanc, and I knew if you made a white wine, that you could bottle it, you know, within 6 months of making it. And if you could sell it out before you made the next one, then it could actually kind of cash flow, you know, as opposed to the reds, kind of, it takes 18 months or sometimes 24, you got to age it. Then you're making multiple vintages of outlay of cash. So I'm starting to see the business formulate right in front of me, right? And how the cash flow is going to work. So my favorite Sauvignon Blanc was from this vineyard up in St. Helena. And the Bartolucci family was managing this vineyard. And so I just called up their office. And people always say to me, what do you mean? You just called Mr. Bartolucci? I said, yeah, I just picked up the phone and I called him. Like, what's he going to say? I mean, the worst he could say is, I don't want to talk to you, kid, get out of here. He was so nice. I just said, I'm 20 something years old. I'm Ryan. Here's what I'm doing. I'd love a couple tons of Sauv Blanc. And he said, well, why don't you come up to the vineyard? And so I drove up there and I'm walking through the vineyard with old man Bartolucci. And he's like, oh yeah, I think you could, you know, if you show up here on the day of harvest, like I didn't get to pick harvest. I didn't get to, you know, on the day of harvest, I'll just fill up some bins for you. I went, oh man, that'd be amazing. So I got a U-Haul and I borrowed some bins and then I had this little, I had a hand crank destemmer, and then I had an old plug in one and these two, and it took me an entire weekend to process two tons. I mean, it must have taken me, I mean, probably 40 hours to process these two pieces of machinery. And, but I made my first barrels in there, and I brought in I filtered it there. I bottled it. And then I went and sold it, and I was just selling to anybody and everybody. And I sold it before the next harvest. And so I had all these other jobs, right? I was working 7 days a week. I was working in vineyards. I was working in tasting rooms. I was working in wineries, like all these part-time jobs, so I could get access to every part of the industry. And that's huge. Like you said, sacrifice. And when you're young, I was basically sacrificing time right? To learn time with people. And yes, or, you know, relationships. But I was so enamored with this wine. Like, it's still, wine makes me feel like a little kid when you're watching a magic show. Like, it is, wine is, and I know, grasp what's happening when the grapes are turning to wine, but it still is like magic every time it happens. And I just love it. It's just so, so awesome. And so I was really infatuated with that. And so I just created my own little business model out of that first year and was like, if I do this over and over and over again for years, 20 years from now, I'm going to have a 3,000-5,000 case winery. I'll have all these great customers. It'll be amazing. And that's what happened. You know, it wasn't it took 9 years, 9 years, 2000 to 2009 for it to pay me Wah Cellars, which is now Wah Family Wines, to pay me anything. And so that's just the sacrifice. And when you build something, because you can build things in all different ways, right? I mean, that's one thing that's really cool about entrepreneurship and very unique about doing things in America is there, creatively, there's not very many rules, right? And you can design things and build businesses in different ways. And so my wife and I have been able to do that. And when we finally met and she took over the wine club, she has the same understanding of relationships as I do, and the want and the need for that. And we're not in it for the glamour of wine, if that makes any sense.
And just to explain to our audience, there's some people like, I own a winery, and it's just a prestige. It's like, you know, it's just to show off.
Yeah.
But you actually have the passion. So continue there. But also, I want to finish this thought and then go back to, where in this timeline did you meet your wife?
Yeah. Well, that's my favorite story.
Well, tell it, man. I'm sure.
Yeah. So good. She's a little bit older than me, even though I look older than her. She's amazing. She's from Texas. Grew up in Houston. Went to A&M. She's an Aggie. Gig 'em if we have any Aggies listen out there. And then she lived in Dallas for 12 years. Well, it was March 5th of 2004. It was a Friday. And I had, one of the things I did in building a brand, if anybody's out there and you're building something and you're wanting to sell something, how do you get to market, so to speak, right? And I always just look at things as logically as I possibly can. Well, you just have to find the consumers. Well, where are the consumers in Napa? Well, they're usually in a hotel or a bed and breakfast or, you know, at a restaurant or, right? That's what they're doing. So I got hooked into the bed and breakfast scene. So I'd go out and Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I would do happy hour pouring at a lot of the bed and breakfasts, right? Because I didn't have a winery and it just had a label. And so I would meet people, so great. Well, I got an opportunity to do a pouring at the Villaggio in Yountville, which at that time was one of the largest hotels in the Valley. And Yountville was kind of right in the center of Napa Valley and was a big, high-end hotel. And so that was super cool. So I got there and I'm setting up my table and I got my wines and a group of really loud ladies come strolling into the lobby. And one of the ladies, Kathy, came up and asked me for some Zinfandel. I was like, oh yeah, sure. And we got to chatting. I said, where are you from? She said, oh, I'm from Dallas. I'm getting married in 2 months. I said, oh, that's incredible. I have a little more. And she came back for a second glass of Zin. I gave it to her. She comes back for a third glass. And I was like, oh, Kathy, all right. Getting the weekend off to a great start. It's awesome. So great. Well, the story goes, she tells me later that she was so embarrassed to come up for a fourth glass of wine because it's she should have just asked me for a bottle, right? And so she asked a girlfriend of hers that was only drinking white wine, hey, will you go up and get me another glass of that Zinfandel? And so she strolls up and asked me for some Zin, and we got married a year later. So that's how I met Crystal.
Nice, nice.
Over a bachelorette party, and Kathy enjoying her bachelorette weekend. It was great. Phenomenal group of girls. And I met Crystal, and then she ended up moving out a little less than a year later, and we got married and family and all that. She was working for Neiman Marcus at the time in HR, and then she moved out here, worked at Williams Sonoma. And I was still getting the winery going, right? Like I still had all the different jobs and building the brand and all of that. And so she worked there for about 3 years. And then we had this really awesome moment in 2008 going into 2009, where she sort of retired from corporate America and she came to work for the winery. And I had one of the bottles of these. And so we went out to dinner at a Cole's Chop House and opened up one of the bottles I had. This is my last full bottle of this. Nice. So this will never be opened, but we opened that and we drank it together and sort of christened her into the wine business with the same wine that I had, kind of a thing.
That's awesome. That's super symbolic. And yeah, that's great, man.
Yeah. That was incredible. And Crystal has really changed. She went full, like, extreme with our business model in terms of direct to consumer, which is really great. Cause I was doing lots of wholesale and I wasn't doing scores and ratings and any of that stuff, but I was traveling around and getting it into restaurants and doing some stuff.
Like describe that. Scores and ratings for our audience, so they know what you're talking about. That's the second time you mentioned it. And I want them to be tracking with you.
Yeah. So the way most people have built their brands over the years is they go to the Wine Spectator or the Wine Enthusiast or the Wine Advocate, which is Robert Parker, or, you know, any of these people who taste wine, and then they rate it and they'll give it a score and then they'll put it into a magazine. Right. And then it gets out to people and you can market it. But, you know, there's always a but. You know, I put my first wines out there and I got some good scores, and I get a call from them and they say, okay, Mr. Why, you, here's your score, put you in the magazine. It'll be X amount of dollars if you want it in color. And then if you want it in here, if you want it in there, would you like to do this ad? And would you like, and I went, what? I thought you were providing a service to consumers, and then you had the industry like paying for ads in the magazine. I didn't know it was the wineries themselves. And I went, what? I am so not doing that. Like I don't want to create a relationship with a customer in that fashion. It just didn't, I don't know. It just didn't feel right. I was like, I'll go out and find the customers myself.
Yeah. And I agree with you 100%, Ryan. There's so many awards and recognition and articles. I'd say sadly, the majority today where it's pay to play, you pay us and oh, you're the award winner for 2021. Right. And it's whoever pays the highest fee. So you're really not getting the best product or truly. No, there's some companies who earned it, but I'm with you, man. I don't want to pay to be recognized. I want to be recognized for my merit and my worth.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you get that when you look somebody right in the eye, right? And you have a conversation and they can, you know, people can judge you for who you are and your wine. And when people are, Crystal and I always say, you know, we have great relationships with our customers, but they are not going to continue to take their hard-earned money and pay for our wine because they think Crystal and I are really cool.
Yeah.
Right.
They want to enjoy the wine and get value.
Yes. Yes. And they are the ones that will tell you what your product or what it is that you are selling is worth. I mean, they will, you know, our customers, our wine club really sets our pricing, you know, because it's what they feel the value is and what they're willing to pay for it is, that's what it's worth. And it's irrelevant. Our wine is really about that. There's no outside influence. There's nobody tasting our wine and telling our customers, this is really good. You got to buy this, right? They're doing it for themselves, which is really great. And we have a really, Crystal has just kind of exploded the wine club and the direct to consumer model. And then the retention, I mean, our retention, we're going into like second and third generation wine club members. That's when, you know, you've been around a long time, when the kids of your first wave of wine club members start joining the wine club because they kind of grew up on it.
That's awesome. You know? And talk about that. So for our listeners, obviously, there's probably not a ton of winemakers, but we have a large audience. And a lot of our audience are business owners with consumer direct models. What are some tips you'd share with the audience about growing a customer direct model?
Yeah. Wow. It's really, and you know, the internet has really changed things, you know, and we have used it in a way to maintain the audience and sort of keep up with your customers, like their family, which they are. But I think that, you know, ultimately it sort of depends on what it is that you're selling, right? And how you're going to connect with your customers. So for us, we are not selling, you know, mass quantities of wine all over the place. What we're really looking for is strong relationships, you know, with people who enjoy our style and my artistic expression of wine. And if you can find that, it's really a home run, but it becomes very personal. So I think you have to figure out a way, because this is really funny. Like you hear this all the time. Even though it seems the internet has really connected us more, a lot of people are feeling a little less connected, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%, because it's impersonally personal. So you're distant and you're repeating information. You're sending bulk emails out to 100,000 people. So Dear Ryan and David isn't really Dear Ryan and David. It's a marketing guy wrote this and sent it out fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think there's got to kind of be a balance there for us. That Dear David has to be directly at you, and you have to feel like we're standing right there and that we care about you, because we do. Right. So how do you just have to figure out how to, in this age, like where we are, how do you continue to connect with people? Because if you're going to do anything direct to consumer, you know, you've got to have, and certainly at our price point, if you're not going to have somebody in your industry, like scores and ratings, saying you got to buy this because it's really good, then it really comes down to trust and then consistency, right, with the product. So I think it's in some ways it's probably a little harder now to get somebody's attention, right, and have a conversation, right? Our average, when we hang out with people, I mean, it's like 3 or 4 hours, you know, you can do a tasting sometimes a little longer, because getting to, how do you get to know somebody in 30 minutes or in an hour? I mean, if you're having good dialogue back and forth, you know, which I would love to do sometime off of this, because it sounds like your family's a total hoot, and the way you grew up in Massachusetts, we love the Northeast.
Nice. Yeah, man. I didn't grow up with my father, but I went to visit him a couple years ago in Italy. And when we were there, what you're describing was every meal. Like, we'd sit down. It was literally like, I remember, no joke, we went to restaurants where there was animals outside. And when we came out, they were gone because we just ate them. I mean, you talk about fresh food, and the meals were 3-4 hours each. And we talk. And I kid you not, Ryan, my daughter and I, my son and I are going back, and my wife, but we ate like kings and queens, never stopped eating for 2 weeks, and we lost 15 pounds because you're enjoying the meal and you're relaxing, and it's, at first, it's not out of a can, you know? So yeah. What you're saying is that wine really is, it's a staple of culture, and it really just helps communication flow in a lot of ways, not because of the alcohol, but there's something about the, and again, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm not a big drinker because I grew up around a lot of alcoholics. Mm. So I've always, like, I'm going to be extra careful. But when it comes to that casual drinking with a meal, there is something warm and comforting about it. And the camaraderie just strengthens. And I feel the same way about cigars too. I don't know if you like cigars or not, but you sit down and you smoke a cigar, and it just, conversation flows.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah, totally. I used to love cigars. They don't make me feel too good anymore. So I don't know if it's an age thing or whatever. So I think my cigar days are over, but I love the smell of them. And then I love hanging out when other people are doing that. And I think you're right. And there's nothing like a cigar and a nice, you know, port.
Yeah. After a great meal with your boys. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. All right. So we can talk about that later. I don't want to distract the listeners. We love you guys. We're going to bring you value. Okay. So you find your passion. You're dedicated to this art. You build your organization. You meet with your wife. She's a catalyst to the marketing side. And you guys are growing together. You're growing a family. You're building a consumer direct model. Where are we at today, Ryan? And if I skipped anything, you go back. I don't want to skip any part of your story, but where's Ryan today? And then let's get into where you're going, not just your org, but your son and Crit.
Yeah. So, you know, there's so many, again, this sort of goes back to, don't be afraid to ask any questions or ask your, my family always makes fun of me because I can literally invite myself anywhere. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes you might not get the invite. You got to invite yourself. And so in the first handful of years I was building a business, you know, it was hard to get access to consumers. And I'd meet people here in Napa, whether at a restaurant or at these, you know, bed and breakfasts or whatever. But it was really slow going, right? In your build. So I had sort of this initial mailing list of people in the first couple of years that bought my wine, and they would reorder. And so I started calling them, and they lived in all over the place, Michigan, Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, you know, Florida, wherever. And I would call them and say, hey, I could spend $1,000 and get my wine into this magazine and do all this stuff and advertising, whatever. But how about I ship out a bunch of wine to your house. I'll fly out there. You get 10, 20 people together and we'll have a wine party. And you just let me, you know, give a little 20-minute spiel about myself and the wine, and you guys have fun and have a big party, whatever. And that just, I did that for years and years, and people loved it. So it was like the old school Tupperware parties, right?
Yeah, man. That you hear about. That's great.
And I did that for years and years and years. And then one wine club member would become five, and five would become 10. And right, you just, and so we have these people always laugh and they're like, oh, so what are your biggest states? It's got to be, you know, New York, California, Florida, Illinois, like all this stuff. I'm like, no, we're in, you know, Ohio and Michigan and Indiana and, you know, Missouri. And there, people are like, what are you doing there? I was like, you know, our customer, I always told them, you know, people drink wine everywhere. People have money everywhere, right? They want to drink good wine too. And our business is about relationships at the end of the day. And so it turns out that we connect really well with people from the South and the Midwest. Like that's probably 90% of our wine club, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, but if you have that niche and they love the taste and they love the wine, man, keep going.
And then, well, in the community, right? You've really created, you know, we've our wine club is the Friends of Wah Club, so FOWC, and so it's a lot of these people go on vacation together, like they have relationships outside of just a transaction with Ryan and Crystal as a winery and you as a wine consumer. Like there, it goes deeper, which is really what we're trying to do. Right. I mean, I really believe that if you're going to build something and you're going to do something, you know, it needs to bring value to people. Then also just hopefully it's a little deeper of a connection than just, you know, I'm just selling this thing, right? And so that's really what we're trying to accomplish. And Crystal tells me all the time, even this morning as I was walking by, coming to get on with you, she's like, I just love it when our customers, they just text me when they want something or if they need something, they can just, you know, shoot a quick text or whatever. And she's always saying little things like that. And she's incredible. I don't know how she does it. She manages everybody in the wine club, and they're all, our wine club is fully flexible. So we're not one of those clubs where here's what's coming, take it or leave it. Like everybody's interacting with it and changing out their bottles and their shipments and what they want. And, you know, it's very cool. And she handles all that.
Yeah. And that shows, I'm watching you. Some people are listening to the podcast through their iPhone or Android device, and they're not seeing your expressions. But when Ryan's talking about the wine and the art, his eyes are lit up. And when he's talking about his wife, Crystal, your whole demeanor changes. Like, man, that's not what I want to do. But then you have this, I can't believe my wife loves it. And then it's like, so you can see her special gift from God and your special gift from God and how together it works so well. But it also reveals the personality and the heart your company really has that is different. Like your wife loves that personal connection, like the text. How many business owners want to get texts from their customers? They want to hide. And your wife thrives off it. And you're like, thank God she does, because I just want to make wine. So it's really beautiful to see, if you're not watching this, just to see Ryan's expressions on his face and his eyes, how he lights up because of his passion. So where are you guys today? And where's the business today? And where are you going? How can we help you get there as a listener?
Yeah. So we are, we're about 3,000 or 4,000 cases. You know, we're a very slow growing company, and that's great because where we are in our lives, we have two amazing boys, 14 and 11. I coach lacrosse, and we want to be there for them. So we didn't want to, Crystal and I think have the energy and could probably do a lot more with the wine business. But I would say, how could you help? You know, you can, if your listeners enjoy wine and they love wine and they want to explore it and they want to explore a relationship with us, you just go to wahfamilywines.com and If you just always know, if you ever call or email, you're getting Crystal or myself. I mean, it's just the two of us.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's very important. We don't want to grow past the point where things become not personal, right? So, you know, I would say reach out and say hello and check out the wines and all of that.
And I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
So we'll spell it properly and give you the right link. So just check out the show notes, and we'll also put some other details and information in there.
Yeah. And then what we're really doing as a family, this thing started about 3.5 years ago. Our little man, our 11-year-old Carter, his nickname is Crit. When he was 8 years old, he came to me with a problem. And, you know, I'm a big fan of entrepreneurship, and we promote that as much as we possibly can. So when Carter came to me when we were on a family vacation, and he said, "Daddy, I don't like my flip-flops or my Crocs that I've got." And I said, "Well, what's the problem?" "Oh, well, I'm running in my flip-flops and I'm climbing trees and my toe bar falls off, and then I stub my toes." And I'm like, "Well, you're not supposed to run and climb in your flip-flops, buddy." "Well, I know, but they're so easy to slip on." And I said, "Well, what's wrong with your Crocs?" And he's like, "Well, they make my feet sweat and I get all these blisters." I said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" He goes, "Could I make and he looks me right in the eye and he's like, "Could I make a flip crit?" And I looked at him and I said, "What is that?" He goes, "Well, it's like the things that I like about my flip-flops and the things I like about my Crocs, and I'm just going to put them together." And I just, where his mind was going, I really liked it.
That's so awesome.
I thought it was very cool. So I told him, "Well, you know what you do? If you ever have an idea, you've got to write it down, because there's this thing called intellectual property, and it all starts the moment you think of something. You've got to write it down. You've got to date it." So I gave him a pad of paper from the Meritage Hotel in Napa. It was in my briefcase, and I handed it to him. I said, "Write me a business plan." "What's a business plan, Daddy?" I said, "Well, how about you draw your shoe for me? Give me your company name. What's your shoe called?" You said the Flip Crit. "And tell me everything about your business. How do you want your customers to feel about your product? What's the emotion behind this thing? And then what are you making and what are you providing?" He's like, "Okay." So he comes back 20 minutes later and he has these three pieces of paper. And I start looking at them. We since have laminated them. I'm actually looking at them right now. And
that's so awesome.
And I was like really blown away with the thought that he put into it, but it went deeper. I mean, he's 8 years old and he like came up with words. Like he owns a word called adventurability, right? He was eight and now he has the trademark on this word. And
so awesome.
I so crazy, but it was so like emotionally intelligent. But he's eight, so you knew he wasn't, you know, fully emotionally intelligent, but it's like I think there's something here. I mean, it was basically, I want my customers to feel happy, safe, and secure in their crits. And it's basically what he wrote down. And then I'm in business because I wanted to start a family business. Family is first and always. That was sort of his mission statement. You know, he just came up with all these different ideas. And I don't know, it was just so, I loved it. And he took it to his mom and she loved it. And I said, "Baby, this is perfect. Because how do you teach somebody entrepreneurship without building something? So how do you teach somebody how you create something from nothing in a textbook. Like, it's just hard, right? So I was like, let's, and I, so I told her, I said, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to forego for a couple of years, putting money in our 401k. It's just a couple of years. We'll put it into this Crits idea, and it's look at it as education for the boys. So we formed the LLC. We got them a bunch of consultants, and they moved forward to create this shoe. And they went to Los Angeles and did the prototyping. He worked and worked and worked and worked. He created all the, took all the different materials, and they created this prototype. And then we couldn't get it produced in the States, for under $100, unfortunately, because it's cement construction. It's a really cool design. I actually have them right here. Here's one. Here's a green.
Oh, very nice. So
yeah,
if you are, again, if you're listening to this on the podcast, what it looks like is a slip-on flip-flop.
Yeah, it's got a toe bar in there.
Yeah, and it's got the toe bar to hold it in place. That is beautiful. And it's got air holes in the shape of designs.
Yeah, you can pick your color and critter that's going to be on his website. So this is really crazy. So again, it was just sort of exercise and entrepreneurship. And so they learned intellectual property. They learned profit and cash flow. And they learned manufacturing and supply chains. And then Carter's been to China twice to work with the factory and all the suppliers. And he launched a Kickstarter campaign last summer, just this past summer. And he raised $46,000. You can believe that.
And that's incredible.
Yeah. And so that's not the craziest thing. So he's been talking to people, and his local paper and other people have gotten a hold of this thing. And so he's been doing presentations at all the different schools. This was pre-COVID. And then some people got a hold of it. He got a call from Shark Tank. He got a call from Nordstrom and actually signed on with them. So he'll be on Nordstrom.com in January.
Hey, praise God.
Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing, dude. And you know what? Crazy. If you're listening to this, it doesn't matter if you're 8, 28, 58, or 88. If you have an idea, Ryan just walked through a model. And it doesn't have to be complex. You don't need to get, you know, $50,000 in attorney fees and take 2 years to develop it. Man, write it down, put down what you need, put together the plan like Ryan just outlined, and get to work. I mean, first to market in today's society is going to beat any kind of patent over and over again. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't get a patent, but Ryan, I'm sure you could talk about this if you want, but back in 2012, during the Obama administration, they basically changed the whole patent process. And in a lot of cases, it's just not worth the time and money. And there's almost like intellectual, what's the word? Where basically if a company, if you're not using your patent and they want it, they can steal it. And the government gave them access to do so. So if you have an idea, patent it if it needs to be, but run with it. And if his son Carter can at 8 years old take 20 minutes, put together a 3-page business plan, make it a reality, you can too. So now Carter's a special kid and you're a special dad, but I mean, we can all do this. It just takes vision and effort.
Yes. I think effort way more than the vision, because I think people sometimes get the sense that we as entrepreneurs know exactly where it is that we're going. We don't know. I don't know if the destination's over here or over there.
It kind of adapts and forms, right?
I'm not exactly sure, but you have written things down and you have a framework of a plan, right? And his plan is to deliver happiness, safety, and security to his customers, right? And he's doing it through his shoes. He's taking it, he's putting his money where his mouth is too. Like he comes up with just the coolest stuff, David. He came up with Crits Cares, and he's donating $2 from every sale to his school, which is an artful learning school. So programs like music and art that are not in the core school, that are no longer funded, you know, they have to be funded from outside sources because they're not part of, you know, the way I grew up, we absolutely had art and music and woodshop and, you know, all sorts of stuff, but that's kind of, that's not here in California. Those things don't exist.
We were forced, not forced, but we were made to take, we were made to take every type of class like that just to expose us to see if that's something we wanted to dig deeper. So guy or girl, you took shop, guy or girl, you took home ec, guy or girl, you took art and music. And man, I failed music miserably. Ta, ta, ti, ti, ta. I never got that.
Yeah, totally.
But we were exposed to it. So that's cool that your son is saying, hey, the government's failed greatly. And it's not their responsibility anyways, but I'm going to step in and help my brothers and sisters, man, the community. I'm going to help provide this exposure, see what they love.
Yeah. He just wrote a $500 check to them. He wrote a $400 check, you know, 6 months ago. And, you know, he's hoping, you know, if he can sell, you know, 1 million pairs of crits, I mean, that's, you know, $2 million to give away. Right. You know, that's a, he's thinking, he does think much bigger than I really anticipated him doing it. And it's interesting. If you think back to, you know, I looked at that first experience with wine and the food and all of that as sort of life and, you know, how I look at things and how I want to model my life. Well, he, for him, creating crits came out of these experiences at his school. So he takes that very seriously when he talks about it. And he's like, you know, music and art and these programs, you know, really helped me for who I am. And I think that's sort of just his creative nature. But that's a, and then he always loves to tell people, because we're shipping his shoes right now, this first round, out of our garage.
Oh man.
So he's like, well, my dad started in a garage with his winery. And I was like, oh, that's true. I totally did. Like, I made my first few vintages. So he loves that.
That's
that story.
Awesome. And yeah, you're a great dad. You're a remarkable dad.
It's pretty cool. Here's his box.
Crits for all critters. For those of you can't see it, beautiful packaging.
Are you ready for adventurability?
And his patented word, or copyrighted word.
Yeah. He's got copyright and a trademark.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous box. I mean, just that alone, that's a great investment.
Yeah. Cool. Man. So we're going to be helping the little man grow crits, and people can go check it out at crits.com, C-R-I-T-T-S. And that's just about to launch. You'll see the initial landing page, and just about, I think it's like going to be on Tuesday.
Okay. Now we're recording this, just so everybody listening, in November.
Oh yeah.
We're recording this in December of 2020. Yes. So by the time this is released, you can get your crit. So I'll put a link in the show notes, and we'll have it where you can just click and go get them. So that'd be awesome.
Yeah. In fact, they just arrived. The first, round just arrived into port on November 30th. And so they'll be here any day.
I got a question. This doesn't make them good or bad, but I am curious. Do they float?
They will float. Yeah.
So they have good water shoes, anything at the beach. Cause I live in Pensacola, and if we're paddle boarding and you drop your shoe, you know, certain ones float, certain ones sink. So that would be awesome.
Oh yeah. It's a, so this is pretty sweet. So he did all of this, and you can check out all of his YouTube and all of that. You can see everything that he's done, but this is a Vibram outsole, which I'm sure people are familiar with. They know shoes. It's the highest end mountaineering material that's out there on the outsole. And then he's got a memory foam footbed. So this basically just molds to your foot after about a week. And then the insole, this midsole right here, this white part, which is typically EVA foam, right? Which is made from petroleum, but this is made from sugarcane. It's called sweet foam. It's made from the byproduct of sugar production in southern Brazil.
Nice.
Have you heard of the brand Allbirds?
I believe I have. Yes, sir.
The shoe brand Allbirds. So Carter and I were reading an article about Allbirds, and they developed this product with a company out of Brazil, and then they open sourced it, meaning every supplier or manufacturer has access to it. And so Carter was like, could I put it in my shoe? I said, yeah, you can put it in your shoe. So he did a bunch of testing and it performed really, really, really well. And so this white layer is actually made from sugar, which is really cool.
Of good use of sugar for once, right?
Right. Yeah, no, totally. and then the toe bar, and then he put neoprene is in the lining here. And that's really for the softness of it on your foot, because he doesn't like blisters. And then this is wrapped in real leather. The construction is really, really, really high quality. And then this is synthetic leather, because he didn't want his mom ends up cleaning all of his shoes. So he's like, well, you know, if there's dirt on here, she can just take a cloth and wipe it off. And I said, well, maybe you should clean your own shoes. but it's a material that's super easy to clean.
Anyway. Well, listen, man, I'm not just saying this. I'll update the audience on these shoes, because my sandals are just about had, and I've been buying the same pair for like 5 or 6 years, and I love them. Not going to lie to you, but I think I'm going to try a pair of crits, man. I'll go on the website, see what I can order up.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, Ryan, today's been fantastic. And we talked about your past. We talked about your present for the winery and for your son with crits. Anything we missed in your story, brother, that you want to share, or any way, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you? And again, I'll put in the show notes, but if people want to reach out, we'll have the websites, but any social media you want to mention or anything we miss in your story, man, shoot.
I don't think, I mean, I think we covered it all, but yeah, we're out there. Wah Family Wines and Crits. You can find us on social media, and you can email us. I mean, everything's pretty straightforward with Crits and Wah. So it's Ryan or Crystal or Carter at crits.com, or Ryan and Crystal at wahfamilywines.com. And we respond to everything personally, whether it's, you know, through social media or phone calls, or as you know, Crystal has lots of text messages with customers. And I'd just say, people are listening, like you said, I mean, I didn't come from an entrepreneur family. We're not incredibly special or gifted in anything. I would say, pay attention to life and what you're doing and the decisions you're making, and be present with what you're doing, and don't just go through life. Have a purpose. And then take some risks, most of them emotional. I think if you take the emotional risks, then you know, the financial risks you can deal with. But you gotta put yourself out there and then work hard.
That's awesome, Ryan. Well, thank you for being here today, and that is amazing, truthful closing advice. So if you're listening, listen to this episode, you know, hopefully you took notes if you weren't driving, and then go back and apply it, you know, pray about it, find the vision, start working. Like Ryan said, you may not have the whole, every picture, every step, or it may even evolve and it'll change, but you'll get there. And if you're not working towards something, you're not going to get anything. So I'm David Pasquale with the Remarkable People Podcast. This is Ryan Waugh. Ryan, you truly are a remarkable man. I thank you for being here today, brother. Hang around one more second as listeners for a special offer. And Ryan, I look forward to talking to you soon, trying your son's shoes and trying your wine.
Thank you so much. That was such a pleasure to get to know you.
Yeah, likewise, man. We'll continue the friendship. And to our listeners, check out the show notes. Reach out to Ryan. We love you. Have a great day. And we'll see you in the next episode. Bye.
The Remarkable People Podcast. Check it out. The Remarkable People Podcast. Listen, do, repeat. For life.